the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. I just wanted to tell you I'll be away for a bit on vacation, but my terrific colleagues and friends at EWTN Radio will be preparing a Best Of series in my absence. So sit back this weekend and enjoy a special listening adventure. Well, I want to welcome my listeners to another wonderful and very interesting show from Vatican Insider. And I want to tell you that today I will be coming to you from Chicago. I'm in America mainly to attend a big event of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre and Investiture. And a lot of wonderful serendipitous meetings happened because of that. And one of those is my guest today, a meeting I had with Father Frank Phillips. And he was the pastor at St. John Cantius for 30 years. We're going to talk about that amazing church in a moment. The canons of St. John Cantius as well. We're going to talk about what a canon is and his role in bringing this church to the prominent spot that it has today. So, Father Frank, welcome.
Thank you, Joan, and greetings to all your listeners.
Absolutely. Now, we go back quite a few years. I don't know if either of us remember our first meeting, but we do remember a meeting we had in the Holy Land.
That's correct.
And you were leading a pilgrimage. I was leading a pilgrimage. I believe it was probably the same like hotel. We were coming out of somebody coming out, somebody going into dinner in the restaurant, and we just looked at each other. No way,
right. You know. That's exactly what happened,
yeah,
Joan.
Exactly. Very, very, a very small world. And then, as I said, on September 24th, the pre-investiture ceremony for the Knights and Dames of the Holy Sepulchre took place at St. John Cantius. I have so many friends who were in that parish, who were and who are in that parish, and I know the current pastor, of course, Father Josh Harwell. And it was just such a privilege to be there because I'd heard of its beauty. I heard of the beauty of the Mass, and you have the Latin Mass, the traditional Latin Mass, the Tridentine Rite, English Masses. But we're going to talk about all that in just a minute. But tell me a little bit about this parish. It's Polish, right?
It's a Polish foundation, founded 1893, so it's an old parish. And it was the area the church was located in. There were so many Poles there. It was called the Polish Patch.
Oh, I love it.
So you can imagine families upon families. The school at one time, this is a grammar school, had 4,000 children.
Oh, my word.
The day was divided. Half the day was done in English. The other half was done in Polish.
Wow, amazing.
They used every space.
Cantius is from Kenty.
That's St. John. St. John Kenty. And Kenty is the little village outside of Krakow where the patron of the parish was born.
And that was like 1390. We're talking 15th century. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And so when I came to the parish, no one ever heard of St. John Kenty or St. John Cantius. He was the most obscure saint, and you're laughing, but it's true. And what was revealed over all these years is St. John Cantius is well known throughout the world now because of what has taken place in these past 30-plus years.
Exactly. So you came in 1988 to the parish following a very illustrious line. I checked out the history. An illustrious line of pastors and rectors before you. So 1988 for 30 years, and the church as it is today, the extraordinary beauty, the physical beauty of the church, the chapels, the main altar, and the Polish chapel, we'll talk about that, it is just one outstanding work of art. And the number of masses, I want to talk about that because I don't know of any other parish that has as many masses, for example, on a Sunday. I'm talking to you after the 12:30 mass. That was the fifth one this morning.
That's correct. Yeah. And I believe there's afternoon masses, too.
Yes, exactly. Vespers and afternoon mass. So the church, though, basically came about really with the pennies of these of the Polish immigrants. It was the Polish expat community.
That's correct. We were a daughter parish of St. Stanislaus Kostka, which is the oldest Polish parish in the Chicago area.
Right.
And the St. John's was built because they couldn't handle the overflow.
Oh, well, I remember growing up, and I'm sure it's still true today, that the largest Polish populace in one city outside of Warsaw is Chicago.
That's correct.
Yeah. And just think of the names of all the streets and everything else. But I grew up in Oak Park, and my parish was St. Edmund. I've loved the stories of the churches of Chicago. Cardinal George, rest his soul, gave me some beautiful books one Christmas. One was the 150th anniversary of the Archdiocese. The other was The Heavenly City.
Oh, yes.
And a story of all the parishes. That was probably my first glimpse into St. John Cantius. But so basically, what were you tasked with doing? You looked everything over and said, this has to be done. What?
Joan, I should have had my head examined, because after teaching for 10 years, going into a parochial work was totally different.
Sure.
But then going into a parish, which was, when I got there, there were like 75 people.
Wow.
That was it.
That was it.
But, you know, with immediately introducing the sacred ceremonies, the liturgy, the music, all of a sudden it was like watching a flower open.
Oh.
More and more beauty and the fragrance. So it was a long, 30 years is a long time. And I can look now and see, you know, this is all the fruit of working so hard.
Sure.
To bring back a parish. Actually, it was slated to be torn down.
No, I didn't know that.
It was to be torn down.
Oh, my gosh. No, to go from 75, and I think you told me the other day it's like 2,000 now.
Probably 2,000 plus.
Yeah. And tons of kids. I saw so many children this morning. There was something to do with First Communion, and I saw a lot of families. And then even at the 12:30 Mass, you know. But I want to go back for a minute, because on your website, in looking at the history, and there's fabulous pictures on the website, but in the history it said in July of 1988, when you came, Pope John Paul had issued the motu proprio Ecclesia Dei, calling for a wide and generous application of the indult of 1984, which renewed the celebration of Mass according to the Missal of 1962. And this was known as the Extraordinary Form or the Tridentine Form. John Paul's purpose was to fulfill the rightful need of those attached to this liturgical tradition. And I think here what we have to remind our listeners that after Vatican Council II, which ended in 1965, then we now had Mass all over the world in vernacular, in the native language.
Exactly.
Many, many changes took place. Latin was still said in an awful lot of parishes and dioceses. We did have, because I grew up with the priest having his back to us in the Latin Mass, and then after Vatican Council II, of course, the priest could face the parishioners. But in any event, it was this this document from Pope John Paul that was calling for beautiful liturgy, and that was your strong point. You really loved beautiful liturgy.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
I had two good teachers. One was Monsignor Martin Hellriegel, pastor of Holy Cross Church in St. Louis, and the other was Monsignor Richard Schuller, pastor of St. Agnes in St. Paul.
Oh.
Both opened my eyes to see the treasury of what the church provides.
Yeah.
The sacred music, the sacred ceremonies, the beauty of the art, and how important all these things are, because we're not all theologians. But you know how we learn? Through our senses.
Yes, always.
So you come to the church, what do you sense of touch? Holy water. Sense of sight, you see the magnificence of the sanctuary. You hear the music, There's another sense, a sound.
Absolutely.
But the last sense that you experience, the sense of taste, when the sacred host is given to you.
The Eucharist.
The Eucharist, yes. The bread of life.
Absolutely.
So look how much we learn just walking into a building.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that when Cardinal Bernardine, of course, asked you, this was in after the motu proprio, Cardinal Bernardine asked you to establish St. John Cantius as the site for this renewed celebration of the Tridentine Mass. As a result, of course, it was decided that the indult Tridentine Mass would be celebrated on a weekly basis at St. John Cantius. The first of these was in February 1989. And then on December 8th, 1992, a large group of faithful who had worshipped with the Society of Pius X in Oak Park, they began attending Mass at St. John Cantius. And I think 92, things really began to grow from there.
It was like a rocket.
Yeah.
You could not stop it. And just for instance, how did it grow? Well, when I first came to the parish, we had one child in the parish.
Oh, my word.
Once all these people started coming in, we went from one child, and you saw on Sunday just today how many children there are.
Yes. No, entire families. I met a couple talking with them in the vestibule after Mass, and we were just surrounded by children, which is wonderful. Now, my parish in Rome is kind of an exception to the traditional parish because it's not so much territorial, encompassing so many square blocks or miles. St. Patrick's is for the American expats, the church for Americans, and we can come from 10 blocks away and just on the perimeter of the city. So it's very different, and we don't always see a lot of children. And as a family, they might go to a Italian church nearer their home, you know. But I do want to interject here that the reason I'm even mentioning, well, first of all, it's part of the founding, the return to this Tridentine Rite and the Latin Mass, the TLM, as we're calling it today, traditional Latin Mass, is because, you know, we've all read and heard of, you know, some of the, opposition to the, you know, Tridentine Rites. And the Holy Father has written a document on the Latin Mass. There have been greater restrictions placed, and it's on the whole church, I mean, you know, throughout the world, greater restrictions placed on the Latin Mass, which sometimes can be hard to understand simply because in those parishes where it is offered, you have the large numbers of people, and you have families coming.
That's correct.
Children grow up. They know all with their senses. Like you just said a minute ago, they walk into church. They're 4 or 5 years old, and they put their fingers in the holy water.
Right.
And then not until First Communion are they receiving communion, but still, they see the beauty. Their parents point it out. They go over to pray at a certain Madonna or St. Joseph. So their spiritual life is greatly nourished when they're very, very young.
They grow up in the faith, which is the important thing. It's not just Mass on Sunday. It's the living faith, which is brought up in the family. Daily prayer, sacrifice, prayer at meals together, which is becoming very, very rare. But families need to do these things together.
Right.
In order to appreciate attendance and participation in the Holy Eucharist.
Exactly. And also in your church, in St. John Cantius in particular, before the investiture ceremony, I was walking all around I probably took 40 pictures. The chapel, on the way to the sacristy, all the relics. And I mean, you almost have to have some way, you can't read all the fine print, but tons of relics. So children go in and you see a relic and you say, this is St. Faustina, this is St. John Bosco, or whoever they would be. And then, if that isn't enough, you go to the chapel, just would be to your left as you come in the church, with the replica, the 1/3 size replica of the magnificent altar at St. Mary's on Market Square in Krakow.
Exactly, yes.
I went to Mass there every night for a week when I was in Krakow, and it was jammed. But, you know, don't you think of the Polish in faith? And I don't mean just St. John Kanchis. It's just in their native Poland.
They have a depth to them. In fact, why did I commission that altarpiece?
Yeah.
Because the parishioners who built our church were from that area of Krakow. And maybe the last thing they saw was that altarpiece.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I had that altarpiece, the Wichtels altarpiece, commissioned, it was my chance to have a votive offering for the faith of those early parishioners,
yeah,
the builders.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
So this is the first time I just put you guys on, and I'm calling in, and it is such a blessing to speak to you. And I want to say to all of your listeners that I'm thinking of you and praying for you if you are out there and you are lonely or you are sad or you don't feel you have much to praise God about. I am praying for you that you will discover something and the Lord will really touch your heart today.
The largest religious media network in the world, EWTN has an important role in educating others about our Catholic faith and spreading the good news of salvation. We invite you to explore our numerous pages of historical faith documents, prayers, teachings, and other current issues in Catholicism today. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Have you ever noticed that the world associates fanaticism with religion? But G.K. Chesterton says the strangest fanaticism that fills our time is the fanatical hatred of morality, especially Christian morality. It's the irreligious who are fanatical in their hatred of religion. They hate religion because religion is the only basis for morality. They hate morality because it's clear that they prefer things to be vague to the point where they can call wrongs rights. You cannot call something a right when it defies God's laws. We can only call it a sin. If we really care about respecting human rights, Chesterton says, we need to treat them as divine rights. All rights come from God, and God is not going to break his own laws. Neither should we.
Spend more time with the Apostle of Common Sense. Visit Chesterton.org for more information.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Father Frank Phillips, a longtime friend and former pastor for 30 years at St. John Kanchis Church in Chicago. I think of Poland, I've been there a number of times in recent years, but I definitely think of Poland and faith. And Father Frank, when you think about it, when Poland was not even a geopolitical unit, the entity, it was held together by the Catholic faith.
That's correct.
And Pope John Paul reminded us of that more than once, you know. Did you ever meet him in your time here?
At least 10 times.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm glad to know that. So, you know, how could you not? Did he visit ever St. John Kanchis?
No, he never visited, but the crowns that are on the Blessed Mother...
Yeah?
I had those commissioned, again, as votive offerings.
Oh.
And we actually took those to Rome, had audience with the Pope, and he blessed them.
Oh, wonderful. No, they're beautiful.
And just yesterday, the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary, they had the rededication of the altar.
Oh.
So it was done, you know, so many years ago with new crowns, and now the altars, everything's all been restored to the former beauty.
When you walk in the church, you just kind of intake of breath, the beauty, the solemnity. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but I love the cornerstone, what's written on the cornerstone of St. John Kanchis. Awesome is this place. It is the house of God and the gate of heaven. I mean, Father Frank, that should be on every church. Yeah, above the door.
Above every door, yeah.
Yes.
And it's so strange because the facade of the church is so solid, you know, it's massive.
Yeah.
And very cold.
Almost,
but
yeah.
But then you walk in.
Oh.
And you have all this beautiful.
Yeah.
The colors, the wood, the
exactly.
stained glass. Even the stained glass is miraculous on how they designed it.
Really?
The north side and the south side windows balance out so the light, when it comes down, blends.
Oh, my gosh.
So they use colored glasses to make that illusion.
Oh, and they're beautiful windows. They really, really are. And I know they're making some more windows. I was shown a stairwell that had to be recreated, and some glass windows are going to be figurine. Gabriel, Michael, and Raphael.
That I don't know. I couldn't
yeah.
say.
But I think that's a fairly recent project. Now, we talk about the canons regular of St. John Cantius Parish. And tell my listeners what a canon is. I think they just know priest, bishop, and cardinal.
Right. A canon regular belongs to a community of men or women. And what they do as canons, they observe what are called the canonical offices. So that's like, in the present language, the office of readings, morning prayer, midday prayer, vespers, compline, and so on. Those hold the community together. Daily Mass holds the community together.
Sure.
So the canonical life is actually very structured. And it's structured around the life, the prayer life of the church. So that's what a canon does.
And how would you say someone just stepped out of a pew and said, so Father, what's the difference between Father and canon, what they call their parish priest?
Actually, there's no difference, like for us, because they're all called fathers.
Yeah.
Some groups are more particular and they call themselves canons. But that's really such an alien title in America that not many people would understand it.
Well, as a matter of fact, I read on your website that it was Cardinal George had asked you in, I'm not sure of the year, he had asked you to see that interested men begin living the common life at St. John Cantius. And it was an outgrowth of life at the parish, and the Cardinal called it the Society of St. John Cantius, and then later that was changed to the Canons Regular.
That's correct,
yes.
Because the society is very loosely organized. The more... One of the priests that helped form the canons said at the very beginning, what you are living is a more charismatic
okay,
of society.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The more formalized you became, canons regular.
Gotcha, exactly. I understand there's a pretty good growth in those vocations. How many canons are there now?
30.
30. And I met some young men today who are studying. So, and I read on the website that the canons serve in 3 churches in 2 dioceses and have 57 masses a week and 700 confessions. That blew my mind.
It doesn't surprise me at all with the confessions, because when the men used to come to me at the very beginning, what are you looking for? I'm looking for someone who would be willing to spend hours in the confessional and to perform the sacred rites with clarity, with devotion, and reverence.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I need.
Exactly. Well, a lot of people today feel that Mass is, you know, we have fewer every Sunday, it seems, once an hour, and now it's 2 or 3 on a Sunday morning in a parish, and you go to fulfill your Sunday obligation, and that's a beautiful thing to do. But so much of it feels like it's rote. And when you answer the priest, it's something you weren't even thinking about. You just know that that's the answer. I think a lot of the beauty, the solemnity, the reverence that can be found in a Latin Mass, and it can be the traditional Latin or the Novus Ordo.
Novus Ordo, which
in
we
Latin.
Also do, yeah.
Sure. But a lot of people do feel that what they call the sacred is missing. And yet the whole Mass is one big sacred offering to the Lord, the Eucharist.
See, I think somehow people got a little disoriented with, you know, the rite itself is sacred. And so you cannot take that away from it.
No, no.
But how the rituals and so on are carried out could sometimes be, I used to have with Monsignor Hellriegel, he says, many times the celebration, as it should have been, turned into a demonstration. And that's what happened to, I think, many, many individuals.
Today, it was the first time in a while that I've been to a Latin Mass, because, of course, we don't have them in my parish in Rome. But I just sensed reverence. I saw recollection. I didn't see a lot of movement of people in pews or whispering to a neighbor or something. Yeah. It was each person was really there for that entire sacred time, the liturgy of the Word, the liturgy of the Eucharist, and then receiving communion at the altar rail. Mm-hmm. I had not had that occasion for many years. They've taken altar rails out, so you just stand in line. But
stand in line, right.
Yeah. I love the story of St. John Cantius, and when I came for that event with the Holy Sepulchre, and we met, not knowing we were going to see each other after a few years, I just knew I had to do a story of a wonderful man of faith, your story, and a wonderful community of faith, St. John.
Thank you so much, Joan. It was a pleasure seeing you. It was a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
But so great.
Well, my listeners, I should have said this halfway through our talk, reintroduce Father Frank Phillips, the former pastor of the church we've been talking about, St. John Cantius. And, you know, if you ever come to Chicago, please make a point. Go online. Make sure one of your Sunday Masses is at St. John.
At least one.
At least one, yes. Oh, exactly. Well, Father Frank, God bless you. May God bless Father Josh, all the canons, the young men studying, and just the few wonderful parishioners that I've met just today. So continued good luck and continued blessings.
And safe trip back to Rome.
You got that right.
And in your apostolic ministries.
Thank you. Thank you.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.